The Still Loading Podcast is brought to you by the wonderful people over on Patreon. Amazing people such as Kevin from the Bit by Bit Foundation, Eric H., Gilmer, Mr. Biscuits, Charles M., and Stephen P. have been wonderful enough to support the show over there, so if you would also like to get your name read at the beginning of an episode, along with a bunch of other bonus goodies, go over to patreon.com/stillloadingpod and check out all there is to offer. On this episode of Still Loading.
Excuse me, princess.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of the Still Loading Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Koval, and today's episode, we are continuing our look into the Super Mario Brothers Super Show / Legend of Zelda Power Hour that we all know and love. Well, actually, I didn't experience it as a kid, but many people know and love from growing up in the 80s and 90s. This week, we are covering the first episode of the Legend of Zelda cartoon. And episode one is called The Ringer. But of course, my co-host with the mo-host, Dexter Morrill, is back. Dex, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm back. And I actually am not sick this time. So I'm pretty excited.
Well, Dex, I don't know if you will be happy to be back for this episode because I got opinions. I got thoughts on this episode. They did my boy Link dirty in this show. Now, a little bit backstory. Normally, you know, I go into what's your history with the Legend of Zelda cartoon and blah, blah, blah. I'll tell you mine. I've never fucking watched it until today. I've never watched this cartoon. I've seen the clips. I've seen all the excuse me, princess, and all the other stuff. I cannot believe how much of a disservice they did to the characters in this game. It is... like Mario at least is like comical and goofy and silly, and like the Mario games are already so zany because they're, you know, they're cartoons essentially. You know, he's a plumber from Brooklyn in the Mushroom Kingdom eating mushrooms. Like you don't have to have anything serious in it. But Zelda has, like, just from like its nature, has a lot more of a serious tone about it, and that's why, you know, like almost every Zelda game has a very epic feeling to it. And the show was kind of trying to play on that, but add some comedic elements, like some comedic, comedic relief. I couldn't think of the word relief, but yeah, some comedic relief. And their version of that is just making Link one of the worst characters I've ever been subjected to in my entire life. So that's my experience with the Legend of Zelda cartoon, Dex. What about you? What's your history? What's your experience with this cartoon?
Mine is of the right demographic that they were aiming for. Maybe I was probably a little younger than they were aiming for, but I was there. I remember being excited, not understanding schedules. Like, that's how young I was, that like, why isn't there a Zelda on this episode? And, you know, waiting, like, oh, I hope there's a Zelda on this episode, you know, of Mario Super Show. Because I definitely was playing, you know, my NES back then, my NES, the one that my parents bought. But and there was definitely Zelda happening, like playing that once again, not really knowing what I was doing. Mostly my older brother knowing a little bit more of what he was doing. But just being really into that, you know, the gaming space and seeing these cartoons. So I was always amped to see Zelda. And, you know, similar to our journey through Captain N, I'm seeing it through an adult lens now and seeing it, like, understanding a little bit more about the plot and the characters. And, yeah, I definitely, rewatching it for this, had that same knee jerk of like, oh, my God. How did they make Link the most unlikable character? But I really was trying my best to put myself back in the context. And that was like the bad dude era, having attitude, you know, like Sonic the Hedgehog and and, you know, like cool dudes, like even like Alvin from Alvin and the Chipmunks. I remember really liking Alvin, even though he was also like a scamp who, you know, didn't always do the right thing. Like that, it was just kind of this popular protagonist characterization of the time.
I think what's odd about this characterization, you're right, this was the era of like the cool dude, you know, like cool dude with attitude type of thing. And there's better examples from this era of them doing that where they don't make them awful humans or awful people. Yeah. Like
Raphael Sonic, from Ninja Turtles would be one.
Yeah. And like the basically the what that equates to most of the time is just a character being kind of like oh shut up man, or you know, some kind of like some smart aleck remark, you know, some smart ass response or retort, and that's about it. It doesn't escalate much further than that. And the way this episode opens, which perfect transition, Dex, thank you for setting me up for that. The way this episode opens is with Link being whiny as shit, complaining about living in a comfy castle. He's like, oh man, I used to be able to sleep in mud and now I'm in this castle. I'm like, holy fuck, dude. Like, that's not rude or crude or any of that type of stuff. Any of those cool dude attitudes. You're literally a dude being like, it's cool to sleep in mud. And I'm like, what basis of reality is that for anything?
It's just complaining for the sake of complaining.
But the very next scene, this is really where, like, it was like, when I first saw that first scene, I'm like, okay, that's an odd choice. But then the second scene is even stranger because he walks out onto the balcony of his like castle room in the tower that he's sleeping in, and he's just fucking perving on Legend on Princess Zelda.
Yeah, there's cat calling and whistling happening from within the first three
minutes.
I don't know if we want to back up a little bit and set the stage a little bit, because this might have been before Adventures of Link had come out, at least in the US, because the story setup that they have is there's still just the two Triforces. There's wisdom and power. Courage had not been invented yet. Also, Ganon is alive, which unlike the Captain N episodes where they were, you know, reviving Ganon, that little weird little pig creature. Please check that out, listeners, if you haven't seen that episode of Captain N. But and a lot of the plots for Zelda and Captain N were about Adventures of Link, whereas this feels like almost like an in-between quill, like Ganon's not dead, but it's also like they don't have a lot of the sensibilities and stuff from Adventures of Link yet.
See, I don't know Zelda lore all that well, so I actually didn't even know there was only two pieces of the Triforce known, like named in the original game.
They've explained it off with the Hyrule Historia, like timeline hoopla and stuff, that it's supposed to be the timeline where Link loses, and that explains why there's no Triforce of Courage. But yeah, it's kind of funny that they still called it the Triforce back then, that like there's
only two pieces.
Yeah.
Duo but, Force.
Yeah. The original game, Ganon has the Triforce of Power. And when he goes to get the Triforce of Wisdom from Zelda, the way she keeps it away from him is by breaking it into eight pieces.
Yeah.
And then you go to all the different dungeons to assemble those pieces for the Triforce of Wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
So this seems to be after that, because the Triforce of Wisdom, which also has a voice, they talk, the Triforce is talking. Yep. But so it's strange. But Ganon hasn't been defeated, or Ganon is back for some reason.
I mean, I don't really consider this anything in terms of the timeline of Zelda. I think it's its own separate thing. I think you could make the argument that it's tied with Captain N because it's all part of the cartoon universe. But
right.
I just, you know, like Ganon's the bad guy. It doesn't matter if you've defeated him or not. He's the bad guy. So it's the same reason. Like technically you defeat Bowser in Mario, but we don't question why King Koopa's still there.
That's true.
You know, I
might even argue that this is why they're choosing to do live action for the movie.
This show?
I would argue that's why they did animated for Mario. Because
Mario's more of a cartoon. Yeah.
The previous movie was live action, and I think they wanted to distance themselves and I wouldn't be surprised if it's something similar for Zelda.
But so back to the episode, something else I noticed about this intro scene, Dex, is why is the Triforce in Link's room of all places? He is sleeping with the Triforce of Wisdom, like on a pedestal in the middle of his room. Like, I can't imagine A, that would be easy to sleep next to. It's very bright. You know, it's going to keep you up at night. But also two, why is he the only guard there? And actually, secondary question, something I noticed, because later on in the episode, Zelda is judging an amateur magician's contest. There are no guards anywhere.
Yeah, you never really see any guards show up, do you?
Why? She is royalty out in the middle of like a big tournament. There would be knights everywhere and guards protecting her, but there's none at all. And why is Link the only person guarding the Triforce? Like, you could make the argument, okay, he's the hero, so of course he's going to guard it. But why is he the only one guarding it? That makes no sense to me.
Yeah, I did have that thought when, like, that never came up in the dialogue after, you know, because the Moblins attack him in his room to try to get the Triforce, that there's no conversation of, like, hey, are the guards okay? How did these Moblins make it this far? Maybe it's just those two living in that giant castle.
I guess so. I don't know. I'm just picturing. No, well, and also the fairy, what's her name again?
Sprite.
A fairy named Sprite. That's interesting. But while Link is perving on Zelda, and Zelda, understandably so, is annoyed that wolf whistles her or whatever the fuck, he gets attacked by Moblins in his own room, which, once again, where the hell are the guards? How did they sneak in unnoticed this whole time? He is able to defeat them and gets a magic bow kind of from a drop from one of the Moblins. And this kind of brings up one of the few things I can actually compliment about this show. The fight choreography is not bad for a cartoon of this era. It's actually pretty well animated.
Yeah, I thought it was well done. It was fun. It was funny. You know, he's having to use a pillow instead of a shield.
Mm-hmm.
And they also, I made note of this. I'm being an animation and comic book nerd. At 2 minutes and 47 seconds, they make a reference to Todd McFarlane's Hulk cover, the fight with Wolverine.
Really?
Issue 340, and it's like one of the most spoofed covers in comics. It's the one where Wolverine, it's like close up of his face, just like it is of Link here, except he's got his claws popped, and you can see Hulk's reflection in the claws. Mm-hmm. And on this episode, it's a close up of Link's face. He's holding up the sword in front of it, and you could see the Moblin reflected in the blade of the sword.
Do you mean 3 minutes in? Oh, wait, I'm probably looking at a different video now that I think about it, because there's some videos on YouTube. Like, this cartoon is, you can watch it on YouTube for free. Like, all of it's there. But there are some episodes that include the intro with, like, you know, the Mario Brothers, like the Mario Bros song and everything, and others that don't. I've backtracked enough where I can see what you're talking about now. Yeah, so 2 minutes. I got the right video now. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. And I looked it up just to make sure. I was like, this has got to be a reference to that cover, because I've seen it spoofed so many times or paid homage so many times. And that comic came out February of 1988. So this would have been prime era for people to be spoofing it, especially. Like, because I think this was 91. I'm trying to remember when. So there would have been enough time that people knew that popular cover.
I'm curious now when I probably should have looked this up prior, but like, when did this first episode actually even come out? I did that with the Captain N ones, and I probably should have done that with this. I would assume it would have been the same episode as the first Mario Brothers, you know, September 8th, 1989 is when this episode, The Ringer, came out.
Okay.
It's kind of wild to think that, you know, Zelda was so popular, but they only ended up releasing 13 episodes for this series. And I'll be honest, dude, this series might have to turn into a mini series. Like, I wasn't going to go back to the minis, but like Captain N has an extra 7 minutes of content, which we can usually extrapolate into another 15 to 20. These episodes are only 15 minutes long.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we'll see.
This first episode has a decent amount of like content though.
There's been a whole lot of stuff I'm going to have to edit out off mic, but considering we're 20 minutes into starting recording, I would probably guesstimate what 5 will get taken out, at least already. But we'll just say 20 minutes into recording and we're only like 2 minutes into the episode. Oh my God. So Link, after defeating the Moblins, he gets his stuff together, you know, his green outfit. The blue like nightie that he's wearing is so it makes me uncomfortable to look at, just because it looks like it's a skirt, which, you know, that's fine, you know, to each their own. But like, I keep thinking with him fighting, you're just going to see a whole lot of junk just right in your face.
Yes, there are a few moments where it's almost like what was the movie? Not Fatal Attraction, was the other movie famous, like, where the actress uncrosses or like crosses her legs during interrogation.
It's Sharon Stone and I don't know the movie. I never saw the movie. I know the scene by by how famous it is. Basic Instinct.
Basic Instinct. Thank you. Yeah.
There we go.
There's a few moments where it felt very Basic Instinct, where like he's positioning himself a certain way and it's like,
are we going to see some peen? Who knows? I mean, it is a kid's show, so you wouldn't, but it's,
but I mean, I wouldn't want to fight armored dog people while in nothing but a pajama shirt.
I wouldn't either, especially when you have a pillow to fight with. But after he defeats the Moblins, Zelda comes up to see what he's up to, and the place is a wreck from the fight. And Zelda, so I wrote it off for the most part, but Zelda's pretty cranky in this. Like, she is not that likable of a character either. And I was forgiving of it from the beginning because Link kind of perved on her like really bad, you know, like between the whistling at her and then making all these like comments about her and whatnot. So when she comes to his room and sees it's a complete sty where the Triforce is supposed to be stored, I can understand from her perspective, you know, why she'd be a little cranky. And of course, you know, Link does the, oh, excuse me, princess, I'm the one having to fight, blah, 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 blah. And she heads on down, though, because she has to go judge an amateur magician's contest, like we mentioned prior. And this is where I'm kind of like, Zelda's actually not likable, because she doesn't look like, she's so cranky to be there, too. And I'm like, why? Like, don't take this out on, like, everyone else. Like, if it's your responsibility, fucking just, I don't know. It weirded me out that like she's never seems happy once in this episode. And I can write it off for most of it because Link is an awful person. Like, just so it gets worse in the end of the episode. But like, she's not a fun character. And like, in fact, none of the characters are likable. The sprite, the pixie, the fairy, she's also cranky all the time, like constantly. Like, they really just decided every character is going to whine and complain.
You know, that's exactly what you want in your TV show. All the characters to be unlikable, right? Isn't that the goal? I do feel like Zelda gets a little better by the end. By the end of this episode, I feel like Zelda shifts a little bit, and Ganon also gradually becomes more like Skeletor as the episode goes as well, from Masters of the Universe. But I would like to point out, just because I'm a huge Steve Martin fan, the comedian, and I guess more people know him as an actor now, but he got his start, you know, doing stand-up comedy. And one of his catchphrases was, "Well, excuse me."
And do you think that's where they got it from?
It's absolutely where they got it from. The Bob Forward, is that the name of the writer?
Yeah, he was the writer of the episode.
he was interviewed and someone asked him about it. And he said that I think like one of the producers of the show, someone or maybe showrunner, somebody involved with the show was like, wouldn't it be hilarious if he had a catchphrase like Steve Martin, like, excuse me. And Bob was like, no, that's stupid. And then he ended up putting it in anyway and making it his catchphrase. It must have been one of those like replace this later. And then like, you know what? Let's just leave it in. And now that's what this show is known for, is the Steve Martin, like,
excuse me, princess.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's just so funny to me that like I had this perception of who he was as a character for so long, but on the show, I mean, from like the character from the cartoon, and then to finally watch it and realize how awful he is, it's just so jarring to experience that. It's very
it is, like, especially having not seen it in a while. But I definitely remember as a kid, same thing with Mario, same thing with Captain N, that watching it like, oh, this is who these characters are. Like, I didn't question it because there wasn't decades of, you know, lore and multiple games and all that stuff. You know, most of these, there's one game, maybe two, to go off of, and that's all, and an instruction manual, you know, that was all we had to go off of. So when these shows aired, it's like, this is it. This is gospel now. I'm glad that we've got different links now though, to kind of make this one not as important.
Well, the link from Captain N is infinitely better than the link from this cartoon. Like, link from Captain N, there's some like jealous. There's that one episode where they're jealous of each other. Kevin and Link are jealous of each other, and they're trying to one up each other. But that's it. From the rest of the show, they're just friends. You know, right. And so in this, it's just like this Link would never be friends with anyone. No one would want to be around him. I can't blame Zelda for being cranky if she's got to be around this piece of shit all the time.
This Link is like the Captain N from the last episode where he's been hypnotized to be evil or whatever. Yeah. Like, that's what this Link is.
That's definitely what it is. Zelda is having an amateur magician contest where she is trying, just for reasons, I guess it's just, you know, might just be something fun. Like, you know, it's very Robin Hood-esque, like the whole archery thing, you know, the archery competition. Right. And Ganon decides he wants to enter. And I always thought it was weird where the Triforce of Courage is it, right? That's the one that Ganon has?
No, he has power.
He has power. Triforce of Power, excuse me. Where the Triforce, after Ganon tells his plan, and the Triforce of Power goes, but you're not an amateur. And he goes, but they don't know that. And starts doing an evil laugh.
Which is where the title of the episode comes from. He's a ringer. He's actually good competing with people who are not professionals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the whole tournament thing doesn't last very long because there are some good jokes where like one guy's like, you know, growing plants, but then the one guy's like, I made a thing to make my shoe not smelly.
Yeah, it was very Captain N humor. I chuckled more than I probably should have.
Same, man. Something else I want to bring up here that I noticed in this episode, the music selection and like the orchestration and the arrangements is really fucking good.
It is really good. Yeah. Even the very beginning where the main theme's being played on like a really airy flute. It sounds very much like an ocarina, which obviously this heavily predates that. But still, like, just showing how fitting that kind of Renaissance fair kind of spin to the music works so well.
I feel like this would have been one of the first times that fans of the game would have heard the song fully orchestrated, you know, like.
Yeah, I really liked the version of the dungeon theme as well that would play over Ganon. And I was like, this is almost like, you know, it's got decades of history to it now. But like I got the same feeling as the, you know, Darth Vader's theme whenever he showed up, you know, like the same gravitas of hearing the dungeon theme when Ganon was, you know, doing something menacing. I was like, this works really well, this music.
pleasantly surprised. Like, it's frustrating because the visuals and sound of this show are really not bad. Specifically, yeah. the music and sound are great. The visuals, you can tell they cut some corners on the animation because it's for TV, but like by and large, it's not bad. Especially like when Ganon in the amateur magician contest tournament, whatever. Ganon turns some other dude conjures a lizard, like this other magician conjures a little lizard, and it's this cute, adorable thing, little gecko, and Ganon turns it into a giant fire breathing dragon.
Yes, I think it's supposed to be. It doesn't have a horn, so it might not be, but it's very reminiscent of Aquamentus, the very first boss in the game, the first game. I don't know if it's supposed to be that, or if it's supposed to be a regular old dragon, but it reminded me of Aquamentus.
Yeah, I could totally see that. I didn't think I put two and two together on it, but I think, that would make a lot of sense. Obviously, they took a lot of inspiration. Well, not a lot. They took inspiration from the game. That's one of its primary sources.
I was impressed by the strategy too, as well, of because Link ends up getting pinned by the dragon's breath, like the fire breath. And mm-hmm. he says out loud, because it's a TV show, like, I can't get an angle on him. And Zelda tosses like a silver platter in the air for him to shoot his sword beams and reflect off of to destroy the dragon. I was like, that was actually pretty cool. And then really cool. Zelda proceeds. He says something about like, she's mad that he's not protecting the Triforce. And he's like, well, I just saved you. And I was waiting for Zelda to be like, I saved you with that platter. You would have been roasted, bud. But she didn't.
I mean, they saved each other. That's the reality of it. Like, and I was actually annoyed that Zelda got mad at him. I'm like, you don't have any fucking guards. What did you? Who was going to save you at this point? Because you clearly, both of you needed each other. You needed help. It wasn't just like, if Link was by himself, he would have needed help too. You would have had to come save him. Both of you needed each other.
I could see if she was in the middle of fighting the dragon and then Link came and slayed it or whatever and was like, what are you doing? Get back up there. I had this, but yeah, it was a strange interaction.
It was. And the other half of it too, before this whole interaction happens, when Ganon shows up, right, and he's still in disguise, he turns the little bird, like, he showed to like show off his magician ability, he conjures a bird, this cute little bird in his hand, and then when no one's looking, he turns it into a bat and he goes, go see who's guarding the Triforce. And the bat flies up and sees it's Link and comes back and reports to him. I'm like, motherfuck, you know who's guarding the Triforce, because you just had three dudes die to Link, who was guarding the Triforce. What do you mean, who's guarding the Triforce? You know it's Link. You could make the argument like, who's guarding it now? But he doesn't see Link out with the rest of everybody. So I would have assumed that Link was still there. It's a really weird moment where I'm like, what do you mean checked who's guarding it? You know who's guarding it. And that brings me to another question. So when the Moblins die, they show up in like this smoke hourglass type of thing back in Ganon's base. And then at the end of the episode, when they defeat Ganon, they literally blow him up. Like, they explode him with a bomb, which we'll get to in more detail in a moment. But they blow him up and he shows up there too.
Yes. So I don't remember
this glass.
I cannot remember where, if it's only from watching this show, but I could have sworn like in the manual, it says it too, how like Ganon's forces are infinite because he can just revive them. I can't remember if that's in the lore of the manual or if I just remember it from this show, but I definitely remember. And I think that this is the animated version of that like they, when they die, they just appear back in this like miasma, to pull out like a $5 word here, of like this evil energy that, like you said, it's in like this weird hourglass. And because he even like he zaps them from inside the hourglass because they failed him, but so I don't know if that means they're like super dead now.
Well, would they be the ones that turn into the skeletons that like I don't know. I'm guessing.
No, I think he just has like his forces that he can just summon them out of there. Like, okay, I need Stalfos.
Conjure bones.
Yeah. Exactly. Which we'll get back to that with the Stalfos. I actually laughed out loud at one point during that, but
I mean, yeah. The thing we didn't mention before going up to the tournament is that Ganon just teleports all over the goddamn place.
And yeah, then he mentions, that was a good reference to the first game, because that's how he is true. In the boss battle.
Mm-hmm. But then he says, like, you know, in the above world or whatever he calls Hyrule, he's like, I can't teleport as far as.
Yeah.
So he has to get, I guess, are those supposed to be Stalfos? Skeleton, yep. Just look like just regular skeletons, yep. Not intimidating in the slightest.
Yeah, I mean, that's all. I'm pretty sure Stalfos are just skeletons anyway, but yeah, they look much more scary in the games. But yeah, he has them carry him on I meant to look up what those things are called. It's not a rickshaw. It's one of those like thrones with four posts to carry the throne. I can't remember what it's called, but.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I know what you're talking about, though.
But if he wanted to really like blend in with amateur wizards, probably don't show up being carried by minions.
That's very true. I should have put that together. You're right. He really kind of shows his hand right from the get-go by just making everyone carry him to this amateur tournament.
And that's what, like, he just shows up. He's like, check it out. I can make a bird. Poof. And Zelda's like, go get in line. And that's
it's a bird. It's a plane. It's me, Ganon.
Yeah, that's when he turns the bird into the keys and then is like, go find out who's protecting the Triforce. Like I said, he's gradually becoming more and more Skeletor as the episode goes.
Oh my god, dude. I can't believe I called that thing a bat. It's been a minute since I've played any Zelda, so I keep forgetting that all these things actually have like in canon names. Like, they're not bats, they're keys, they're not skeletons, they're Stalfos, you know, stuff like that. Like I completely brain farted on all of, like, I just was calling them my, you know, my easiest point of reference. I forgot they actually have an in-game world name for all of these things.
I'm just being super nerdy about it.
Hey, if you're not super nerdy, what the fuck are we doing here? That this is the point of this show, is for us to dive into the minutiae that why should we care about? Why am I getting worked up over Ganon sending someone to spy on Link when he knows Link is there? Because it's amusing to me. It's fun to me to kind of like talk about these things, even if talk about these things as if they are serious when, you know, they're just meant for fun, you know? But, you know, I guess fun can be serious too. I don't know. Anyway, Ganon does get the Triforce and Triforce of Wisdom, and he escapes with his Stalfos in tow.
That was the part that made me laugh out loud. He jumps out the window, you know, like you've seen in those action movies, someone like jumps out onto their horse and they ride off in like one swoop. That's what he's doing. Like, he jumps down into his throne and it, like, the Stalfos just like all clatter everywhere as he jumps into the throne. I was like, that's a great gag. And they don't really like hang a lampshade on it or anything. They just like let it go. And it cracked me up.
It's a good moment. I really do like that one a lot. He also has a moment later on with the Moblins that made me chuckle. Like, Ganon is surprisingly comedic in this, and not necessarily, like, there's one where it's just overtly silly, the rest are just kind of like fun gags, like the one we were just talking about. And when they're chasing after Ganon, the way they actually catch up to him is they get one of the wizards to use his magic to, they plant a seed in the ground and they use his magic to grow a tree. And Zelda, I really like Zelda in this cartoon, despite the fact that she's cranky. She actually is like useful. She actually does shit a lot. She saves Link, like we mentioned before, by throwing like the reflector shield thing that he can shoot the beam off of. She's also the one that comes up with the plan on how to catch up to Ganon fast by growing the seed, getting people to tie, kind of using it as a slingshot, and her and Link will sit on it, and then she ties it to like ties it back and then cuts the rope and it launches him forward. And there's actually some like agency to her. She makes decisions and whatnot, which, you know, Princess Lana really never did.
No, Princess Lana was just in on the action of it all. Yeah. But yeah, no, Zelda's really showing why she's the holder of the Triforce of Wisdom. But except then I have to take it back away from her, because while they're midair, like, being thrown through the air by this vine, she's like, how are we going to get down? I'm like, this was your idea. What do you mean, how would we get down?
Why are you asking
Link that? We fall really hard.
Like, you knew this was going to happen when you signed up. I didn't even put two and two together. You're right. Why are you, of all people, asking it when it was your idea to begin with? Well, when they do catch up with Ganon, they actually have some pretty decent fight choreography once again. And the only part that I thought was silly, so they catch up and it's like Ganon and three Moblins, and Link's like, no problem, I got this, or whatever it is, three Stalfos maybe, I don't remember. And then Ganon calls for reinforcements and a bunch of Moblins show up, and so Link goes, quick, Zelda, back to back. I'm like, I can understand that to an extent, you know, like you're covering each other's back quite literally. But the way they do it, Link fucking ties a belt around both of them and makes it so they can't move away from each other. I'm like, wouldn't that severely limit your mobility?
Yeah, I thought the same thing. Only thing I can think of is whoever wrote the Bob Forward saw it in a movie once or a TV show. Like, why would you need, like, yeah, you're going to be back to back. Like, unless it's one of those things where you're climbing a wall together, like each of you has to, I could see needing to be strapped together for something like that, but for battling, I don't know. Like, I guess it does lead to some pretty interesting choreography, like you're saying, when there's a bomb thrown, Link purposely bends down to lift Zelda, or is it the other way around? He does something. Oh, that's right. He bends down to lift Zelda and the Stalfos that are grabbing her, so that the bomb hits the Stalfos instead of him. So, like, I guess they're able to get some fun Jackie Chan-esque, like, choreography out of it. But, yeah, I totally agree with you. Like, aren't we hindering our movement by doing this?
It's just silly. It's just the way they defeat Ganon, though. There's another bomb that gets thrown. And I actually kind of like this where, you know, Link, how does it gets deflected somehow, doesn't it?
Like, he hits it like a baseball bat with his sword.
But it doesn't it get deflected before he hits it with a baseball, like a baseball bat?
Oh, I thought it got yes. He blocks it and it goes straight up in the air.
That's what it is. And Ganon thinks he's going to get away. Ganon runs back into like this like weird like mountain hole thing that pops out of the ground. And Link hits the bomb after him and it blows up. And of course, the only thing that still survives is the Triforce. Ganon's dead because he's in his miasma, to use that $5 word again, with the rest of his enemies. And he's like, when I get out of here, I'll come after you, or whatever he says.
Yes. And I would like to I'm pushing up my glasses for listeners that can't see me. He should only be able to be killed by the Silver Arrow, because that's what you have to get to beat him in the game. So one bomb. Yeah,
that would make a boring show. Actually, no, it wouldn't. That would make an exciting show.
Like, someone didn't beat the game.
Well, I guess unless they don't count this as actually like defeating him because he respawns in his miasma. I don't know.
That's true. That is true.
But it's still silly because like it's silly. But the worst part, in my opinion, of the episode, tied with the opening, is this next one where they're all tied up because of Link's belt. And Zelda's like, I can't get this belt undone. And she's like, Link, help me get this belt undone. And he's like, no way, princess, not before you give me, like, you reward me. And he's forcing himself on her for a kiss.
Yeah. She's like, oh, okay.
And
if you insist.
I know this was back in the day where like those type of jokes were more accepted, but it just doesn't make sense to me why it ever was. It's like, oh, you cad, you're so incorrigible, you know, you're just a rascal, you. That's how it's brushed off. I'm like, no, he's like, if someone if you're tied up next to someone and they start trying to make a move on you that you don't want, that's not, it's not comfortable. Like, that's not right. I'm sorry. Yeah. I know I'm applying way too much logic to this for a kid's show, but I watched it with my daughter and I'm like, I don't know if I want to watch this show with her. Like, yeah. I don't want her learning these lessons at all.
No, I totally agree. I would like to say I wish that would be the last time something like that would happen, but I feel like there are other moments where conversations like that happen, because that's the running one of the other running gags that goes through the show is like he never gets a kiss from Zelda because they get interrupted or she slaps him or, you know, something like that. But that's why I was like, what? When she gives him a kiss in Captain N, I was like, wait, what? Is this a different Link and Zelda?
I mean, it seems like it because their characters are so vastly different.
Yeah. Even though they have the same voice actors, you said, I feel like, on that episode.
Oh, yeah, they are, aren't they?
Yeah.
So. I mean, I forget half the shit that I said on those episodes. I mean, that's the curse of a podcaster, I guess. But yeah, I mean, and that's pretty much, for the most part, how the episode ends. You know, he forces himself on her, but then Sprite comes up, gets the belt out of the way, and he's like, Sprite, I was this close. And listen, there are ways to make that joke that don't involve you forcing yourself on somebody. You know what I actually think of when he said that? It reminded me of, you ever see, what is it? D2, The Mighty Ducks.
Yes.
No, sorry. D3. Maybe no. D1 or D2. Shit. It's D2 or D3. Not D1. I don't know why I said D1. It's D2 or D3. I'm pretty sure D2, because there's that opening scene where Charlie's getting the whole gang back together, getting the ducks back together. And the one girl on the team, Connie Moreau, and the one player on the team, Guy Germain, are always like kind of on it. Like, they're always kind of flirting with each other, and they have been. And so they're both leaning in for a kiss, and then it gets interrupted, and then he goes, oh, I was this close, type of thing. And that makes a lot more sense to me in that moment, because it was something where they're both kind of like, it's two people who are interested in each other, versus this, he's tied her up with a belt. Like, what the fuck?
That was definitely a D2, by the way.
The D2. Okay. That's what I thought. Cause I was trying to remember, cause it's funny, after that, I even remember like the musical Sting where they're like, dun, 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 and they're like going through a mall then, which then I'm like, okay, that has to be D2. Cause in D3, they're going down a highway or like down steps and roads and other stuff.
That sounds right.
God, I love those movies, man. I need to do a, I actually tried a little behind the scenes, listeners. I almost got the actor who played Averman on the podcast. Well, there is a Mighty Ducks. There is one Mighty Ducks video game, and it's a Tiger Electronics handheld for the cartoon. I'm like, that's close enough to get Lex Averman on the show. Les Averman on the show.
The characters are actually ducks.
Yes, where the characters are actually ducks. He politely replied, no, thank you, but wished me luck anyway. I'm like, fair enough, dude. Like, you don't have to apologize. Like, it's your time. So it was close, though. I actually got him to reply, but it's a bummer that he turned it down. But you never know. You never know what the future holds. But anyway, that was a side tangent. Anyway, so that is all. I think that's it for the episode, Dex. Do you have any final thoughts on this one? Any final words on it?
No, I'm glad we're watching it, I think, is my main takeaway. hopefully Link does some soul searching and gradually gets better as this goes. But no, I'm thoroughly enjoying it. This has been probably the most faithful cartoon between Captain N, Super Mario, and this. It's probably feels the most authentic, just because, you know, character designs, the characters that are in it, you know, so the world, it feels right compared to the other two, because you know, Captain N, we had Simon Belmont, who was like this narcissistic, you know, weird characterization, and all the others, Mega Man being a tiny chain smoking boy.
Tiny chain smoking boy is not a sentence I was expecting to hear today.
And then Super Mario, as our listeners will find out, becomes like just this parody machine where it's like, this episode, Mario's on an adventure that's going to parody The Wizard of Oz, you know, that kind of stuff.
I totally forgot that like the Mario show is just all parody pretty much, but I don't know. It kind of makes it more interesting to me in a,
yeah,
in
it's
a
definitely,
sense anyway.
It's definitely fun. I'm going to pull a really, really, really deep cut for any animation fans out there. Walter Melon was a show on Fox Family when Fox Family was a channel briefly. That's actually where the Donkey Kong Country cartoon premiered, was on Fox Family.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was, first it was, what was it, the Family Channel? And then it was Fox Family, and then it was ABC Family, and now it's Freeform.
Okay.
But yeah, so Fox Family had Donkey Kong, but there was a show called Walter Melon. The reason I bring that up is that it was also like this really plain character protagonist, and he would, every episode was parodying some, you know, some kind of pop culture thing. Like there was an episode where there were the Flower Rangers instead of the Power Rangers, or, you know, so every episode was some kind of different send up of pop culture. And that's kind of what the Super Show ends up being mostly. It's like, what if Mario did Star Wars?
I like it. I like it. But all right. For my final thoughts on this episode, yeah, it was fine. Was not my favorite. Could have been a lot worse. Could have been a lot better. I think I'm going to enjoy this still nonetheless. Like I let me put it this way. I enjoyed watching it for the sake of the show. I don't think I'd ever watch it again. I will watch Captain N with my daughter just for fun sometimes because she likes it. I don't think I'd ever show her this show again. Like I'm nervous. Like it's one of those things I'd have to actually rewatch, or I'd have not rewatch, watch in advance to see like, okay, she might like this episode. She might like this episode. She might not like this one. But in general, I just don't like the tones of it. Like I don't like how specifically how Link treats Zelda. I don't want that as an influence in any way, shape or form. And I know it's meant to be comedic and maybe I'm taking it too seriously, but like for kids, like they learn from that shit. Like I don't want her to learn from that. Like as an adult, I can look at it and kind of make fun of it. But for a 3-year-old, no, thank you. She doesn't need that.
Yeah, I support that.
But anyway, that's pretty much it. That's it for this one, y'all. This was the first episode of the Zelda part of the series, the Zelda half. It's honestly probably going to be a mini episode because there's not enough content in these. They're only 15 minutes long. And, you know, there's not like there's a live action segment and an animated segment to talk about. It's just all animated and it's short. So I don't know. I guess we've brought back the minis. It's funny. I was even thinking, I'm like, man, I kind of miss having the still loading minis or whatever I called them. And they're back kind of inadvertently. I was planning on this series being all full episodes, but I don't think I can call this one that. So it's all good though. Minis are back, baby. So Dexter, thank you once again for joining me, my friend. Thank you for hopping on and talking about this. As usual, where can the good people find you online? And is there anything you'd like to promote?
You can find me online just about anywhere. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Blue Sky, I think. I check in on every once in a while. Thanks to you. I got the invite. I don't know if they even do invites anymore. I think it's just open to everybody
now.
Nope,
it's open now for everybody.
Well, I got invited, so I'm going to make a new social media that's a new club. No, I'm just kidding. You can find me on there, DexterMorrill. That's how you spell my name. It's weird, I know. But I'm usually on there sharing my own artwork or artwork from my students. I'm an art teacher as well. But yeah, right now, what do I have to share? I've been working on the promo art for Retro World Expo, which is an awesome convention in Connecticut. I've got some connections there. That's why, even though I'm not based out of Connecticut, I'm familiar. For those of you that have been on the internet for a while, you may remember RetroWare TV. I used to be on that website, so I'm still friends with some of the content creators from there. So the Retro World Expo is a great convention if you're in that kind of New England area. They just expanded to having a three-day convention. It used to be a Saturday-Sunday thing. Now they've expanded to Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Go check them out. It's going to be in the beginning of fall, late summer, September timeframe, late August, early September. So go ahead and check them out. I'm doing work for the artwork for them. I've been doing that since 2018. I also am the cover artist for Old School Gamer magazine. So if you want to see more of my artwork and read some interesting articles, I do that as well. So that's what I've been kind of working on for commissions and everything. And I guess one more plug. I also get commissioned by Mike Levi from he goes by Dongold as his screen name, but he's from Dude, You Haven't Played This Game Yet, which is also a really fun YouTube show. I do artwork for his thumbnails occasionally on YouTube. He's low key, but he's a really great retro gaming kind of content creator that's out there. He also does a lot of stuff with video game music. He's got a video game music podcast as well, so you can check out his stuff there. But yeah, I'm when I'm not teaching, which is when I do most of my work, I am sharing artwork and retro game stuff on the internet, so you can check me out there.
All right, and as for myself, you can follow me on social media as per usual at Still Loading Pod over on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky, Twitch, all that good stuff. I stream on Twitch every Tuesday night and Saturday night around 8 p.m. Eastern. Depends if I have other podcast stuff going on, but generally I do stream on those nights. So if you want to check that out, twitch.tv/stillloadingpod. If you want to support the show, you can do so in a number of ways. You can give it a 5-star rating or review on whichever podcasting service/app that you use, because it helps more people find the show and it makes me feel warm and fuzzy. I like feeling warm and fuzzy. You can also support the show over at patreon.com/stillloadingpod. For $1 a month, you get all the episodes a few days earlier with better audio quality, as well as access to patron voting rights, which help guide the direction of the show. I do quarterly polls for episode topics, and you can check that out. That's all for $1 a month. For $3 a month, you get everything I mentioned prior, plus patron shoutouts. Every patron at this level or higher gets a shout out at the beginning of the episode, which you heard at the beginning of this one. For $4 a month, you get everything else previously, plus 2 bonus episodes every month, 2 mini bonus episodes. And for $5 a month, you get everything, plus access to Still Bonding, my monthly James Bond podcast where me and a bunch of friends bond over 007. So if any of that interests you, go to patreon.com/stillloadingpod and check it all out. But that's it. That's all the time I got for you for this episode of Still Loading. Dexter, thank you once again for joining me.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And with all that said, listeners, I will see you all next time.
And do the Mario.